to the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Sunday, August 8th, 2021. I'm your volunteer reader, Amy B. Let's take a look at our front page story today. What does Iowa's new fluoride law mean for North Iowa? By Jared McNett. Amid the myriad health-related data on the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention website, there is a page dedicated to maintaining information about water systems in all of Iowa's 99 counties. Across 10 counties in North Iowa, Butler, Cerro Gordo, Floyd, Franklin, Hancock, Kossuth, Mitchell, Winnebago, Worth, and Wright, there are 86 public water systems listed. Per the CDC's available data, only half of those, 43, have water that is fluoridated. The remaining 43 systems do not. While the split between fluoridated and not is even per the CDC's figures, the most populated municipality in each of those 10 counties is listed as having a fluoridated water system. Were any of those public systems to move away from fluoridated water, they now would have to give residents within the system a 90-day notice because of a new state law that went into effect in July. We had reports that communities had stopped fluoridation and had not informed their citizens or councils, Iowa's Public Health Dental Director, Dr. Bob Russell, recently said. Doug Tarr, the Public Works Director for the City of Hampton, said that the council there decided a number of years back to continue fluoridating the water, but he agreed that it makes sense to give early notifications to residents if his or any other municipality moved away from the process of fluoridation. I definitely think you'd want to let your citizens know. I think that would be reasonable and responsible, Tarr said. According to him, Hampton adds fluoride to its water to get close to the CDC recommendation of about 0.7 milligrams of the mineral per liter of water. Tarr said that he doesn't worry too much about going above or below that number because officials are putting in the fluorides themselves. You just have to make sure that you're not overfeeding, he said. Forest City Water Superintendent Kevin Reichs said that there is a daily testing at his facility to make sure the water fluoridation levels are at 0.7 milligrams per liter. If it's not, officials adjust their pump to get to the proper figure. Along with that, Reichs also said that Forest City sends its water off to a state lab to make sure that readings are accurate. The City of Iowa City has flow-controlled pumps for its water, so that if the flow slows down, so does the fluoride going in. Then both raw and finished drinking water with fluoride are tested every day. That's not quite the case for Charles City. Their water superintendent, Corey Spiker, said that the municipality doesn't add fluoride to the water at this time. We have a natural level of 0.68, and the recommendation is 0.7, he said. Spiker then noted that if there are any issues, officials contact the Iowa Department of Natural Resources with concerns. For every dollar spent on community water fluoridation, $38 is saved in dental treatment costs. Fluoride reduces cavities by at least 25% in both children and adults. Still, the process is one that has been ripe for conspiracy theorists in America since the 1940s, when Grand Rapids, Michigan became the first U.S. city to add fluoride to its drinking water. One such notion from the 1960s was that adding fluoride, a naturally occurring mineral, to water was a way for communists to rot people's brains and stymie their reasoning. Reporting from the Washington Post in the 1980s contradicted that notion by finding that samples from the Soviet Union actually had fluoride levels below 0.8. So if the communists were fluoridating water to control hearts and minds, they weren't doing a great job of it in their own stronghold. There is resistance to fluoride in drinking water, and it's mostly unfounded, said David Swertny in the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Swertny works at the University of Iowa as an engineering professor and director of the Center for Health Effects of Environmental Contamination, which provides free testing for lead and other contaminants in school drinking water. There are legitimate questions about how much fluoride should be added to water. Fluorosis, a condition that can cause discolored teeth, can occur if people get too much fluoride, but severe cases of the illness are rare, and no evidence indicates that recommended levels of a community water fluoridation leads to severe dental fluorosis, the U.S. National Institutes of Health reported. There also have been concerns about fluoride hurting children's bone growth, but a team of researchers led by Stephen Levy, a U of I dentistry professor, found by tracking children from birth until age 25 that fluoride consumption did not affect their bone development. In 2015, the CDC updated its recommendation on fluoride levels from 1 to 2 milligrams per liter of water to 0.7 to 1.25 milligrams per liter in response to new information about fluoride available from other sources, including from toothpaste and mouthwash. None of the public officials interviewed for this story say that local residents have ever raised any fluoride-related issues with them in the past. If science says we don't need as much, you want to reduce it, Russell said. It's a sign of transparency and honesty. Per Russell, about 20% of Iowa communities do not fluoridate water. Barry Alvarez is coming to town by Phil Johnson. Tickets are now on sale for the Future Is Now fundraising dinner to be held on Thursday, September 30th at Music Man Square. The featured guest will be Barry Alvarez, who was head football coach at Mason City High School for 3 years, winning the state championship in 1978. Alvarez went on to be assistant football coach at Iowa and at Notre Dame. He was then named head football coach at the University of Wisconsin and most recently retired from his position as athletic director there. The event begins at 5 p.m. with a private reception for Alvarez and his former players, managers, and cheerleaders. Doors will open for the general public at 5:30 p.m. A buffet will be served beginning at 6:15 p.m., followed by a live auction and comments by Coach Alvarez. Tickets are $50 each and can be purchased online by going to mohawksfuture.org or from Sherry Rodinghus during school hours in the athletic department at Mason City High School or at Wealth Partners, located on the third floor of the Brick and Tile Building, during the hours of 8 a.m. to 12 p.m., Monday through Friday. Anyone wishing to contribute to the Future Is Now capital campaign can do so by going online to mohawksfuture.org or by picking up a brochure contribution form at Hy-Vee East in Mason City, Hy-Vee West in Mason City, Decker Sports, North Iowa Golf, or Wealth Partners. Currently, the fundraising campaign is at $441,785 in contributions and pledges. The goal is $750,000 to be raised by the end of the year. The Future Is Now campaign is for equipment for the Mason City High School field house and pool. Please contact Phil Johnson at 641-423-7070 if you have questions. Phil is the chair of the Future Is Now campaign. Justice Takes Time by Abby Koch. Pandemic prolongs Cerro Gordo County court cases. Despite vaccinations and eased regulations, COVID-19 has had an impact in the courtroom and on when cases close. Cerro Gordo County Courthouse has returned to in-person trials, with some still being done remotely. The county is still using some external sites. Jury selection is still being done in a modified way for Cerro Gordo County, according to District Court Administrator Scott Hand. Hand says the modified selection is done in rooms in order to allow social distancing between jury candidates. Cerro Gordo County Courthouse is using two separate rooms connected via video conference to select jury members. Hand said Cerro Gordo has been good in pushing jury duty back for people due to the pandemic. We don't want anyone feeling uncomfortable and coming in due to health, said Hand. Each county has had its own way of operating during the pandemic, depending on its courtroom size and availability of facilities. In Northwood, Hand said, Worth County is using its event center to select juries. COVID-19 has also created a situation, according to Hand, with how it has affected the docket and judges' workloads. Civil cases during the pandemic have taken more time to settle compared to criminal cases. Hand said the criminal cases took precedence during the height of the pandemic, causing civil cases to be continued or rescheduled at a different time. Typically, a civil case would take a year and a half, but now it has taken 2 years before being settled due to the pandemic, according to Hand. It certainly has been a challenge, but we are doing our best getting trials through, said Hand. Trial lawyer John Lander has felt the effect of the pandemic with his cases. I have cases that were supposed to be tried during June and July of last year, said Lander. Lander says one particular case he has is still going 4 years after being filed. Lander added that it was supposed to be tried in March this year, but there wasn't a spot open for it. Lander said clients were understanding of the situation and respond appropriately to cases being rescheduled. Attorney Timothy LaPointe said via email that the wait for clients has not been a major problem for him since things have been able to be handled remotely or in person with masking. Law firms have had to make adjustments because of the pandemic for the safety of clients and their own health. My office has adapted to work during the pandemic by having staff and myself work primarily remotely, but with occasional in-person meetings as necessary, with full disclosure of vaccination status and masking and distancing whenever anyone in the room is not vaccinated, said LaPointe via email. Telephone and Zoom conferences have become the new normal with cases and communicating with clients. Many appointments have been by phone or Zoom. Most depositions and court hearings have been by telephone or Zoom, said LaPointe. I have had a few in-person hearings. Otherwise, they have been by telephone or video conference. And that may continue, Lander said. Even if we can get past this current situation to something more normal, we might be doing more by telephone, said Lander. With the rise in COVID-19 cases statewide, and the Delta variant, law firms and courtrooms have had different ways with handling it, and said that the current situation with the Delta variant is being tracked for guidance from the state about it. With the Delta variant, LaPointe says his office has become more concerned and has gone back to indoor masking. He added that they have become thorough in questioning clients about vaccination status. Lander says the COVID-19 variant is still new, and he is unsure how it will affect working with clients and cases. His one prediction was that the situation would become similar to what it was like during the height of the pandemic. If I had to predict, I will probably get more estate planning and an increase in probate matters, said Lander. Winnebago delivers new RV to Wheel of Fortune winners. Winnebago, a longtime partner of iconic game show Wheel of Fortune, on August 5th delivered a Winnebago Solis 59P camper van to the grand prize winners of Wheels Win a Winnebago giveaway. The contest was part of the show's National Parks Theme Week, which ran earlier this year. To win, viewers watched Wheel of Fortune each night during that week, made note of the bonus round solution, and entered at wheeloffortune.com. Nearly 1 million people entered for the chance to win a Winnebago, according to a news release. Eddie and Joyce Hightower of Tumbling Shoals, Arkansas, won it. Married for 55 years, they are self-proclaimed RV enthusiasts. Having recently donated their last motorhome to charity, they said they are elated to receive the new Solis. "We were so surprised to have won Wheels Win a Winnebago giveaway," Joyce Hightower said. "Camping has been a huge part of our lives for many years. In fact, this will be our fourth motorhome." Winnebago partnership with Wheel of Fortune goes back more than 20 years. In addition to providing the Solis for this year's grand prize giveaway, Winnebago provides the Wheelmobile, the game show's promotional vehicle. It travels the country, giving viewers a contestant-like experience in their hometown. "We were thrilled to continue our partnership with Wheel of Fortune," Winnebago Outdoor President Hugh Bauer said in the release. "It was especially gratifying to sponsor a national park-themed giveaway. Winnebago is dedicated to helping people experience the outdoors through high-quality, innovative products. Wheels Win a Winnebago giveaway is just one example of Winnebago's efforts this year to foster an appreciation of national parks. The company announced in March it was bolstering its support of the National Park Foundation, which is the official nonprofit partner of the Winnebago Park Service. Winnebago also launched the Support Your Parks campaign, building on this partnership, which aims to strengthen people's connections to national parks and increase hands-on learning and career opportunities in parks. People who follow Winnebago on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, like Support Your Parks post, and tag a friend will automatically be entered to win one of the park-themed prizes. In addition, for every share of this video via these sites, as well as YouTube through August 31st, Winnebago will donate $1 to the National Park Foundation, up to $25,000. For more information about this campaign, visit winnebago.com/owners/support-your-parks. One dead in I-35 crash Friday in Franklin County. One person died in a crash that occurred about 30 miles south of Clear Lake on Interstate 35 Friday afternoon. The crash occurred around 3:15 p.m. Friday near mile marker 165 between exit 159 to County Road C-47 and exit 165 to State Highway 3 near Coulter, according to the Iowa State Patrol and the Iowa Department of Transportation, IDOT. The vehicles involved were a 2019 Chevrolet Trax and a 2019 semi-truck, according to a crash report from the Iowa State Patrol. Both of the drivers' names have not yet been released. The driver of the Trax, who was killed in the accident, was northbound on I-35 when, for unknown reasons, they crossed the center median and struck the semi, which was southbound, the crash report goes on to say. The Trax came to a stop in the west ditch, where it caught on fire. No injuries for the second driver were reported. Assisting at the scene were the Iowa DOT, Franklin County Sheriff's Office, Latimer Fire Department, and the Iowa State Patrol. New program helps producers manage soil by Dennis Carney, who is the Cerro Gordo Soil and Water District Commissioner. The local Soil and Water District office can be found at 1415 South Monroe in Mason City. He writes, the Saving Tomorrow's Agriculture Resources, STAR, program is an exciting new free program to assist producers and landowners in evaluating their nutrient and soil management practices on individual fields. The Conservation Districts of Iowa, CDI, is promoting a 25-county pilot project this year in East Central Iowa. STAR, developed in Champaign County, Illinois, by their local Soil and Water Conservation District Commissioners, is a way to promote conservation practices. The STAR evaluation program assigns points to each cropping, tillage, nutrient application, and soil conservation activity on individual fields. Higher point values are assigned to those practices that align best with Iowa's nutrient reduction strategy. Based on the points awarded, the field is assigned a rating of 1 to 5 stars, with 5 being the best. In calendar year 2020, CDI adapted STAR to Iowa's cropping practices and natural resource goals. A science committee comprised of university agronomists, water quality experts, Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship representatives, conservation-minded producers, and others met several times to develop this year's STAR point system. This list of practices and the points assigned to each will be reviewed annually. STAR is still in its early stages. Iowa was the first state outside of Illinois to formally sign on with the program. Several additional states, including Missouri, Colorado, and Minnesota, are in the preliminary stages. In addition, a variety of major agricultural industry companies have been closely following the progress of STAR. These suppliers and buyers of agricultural products are acutely aware of increasing consumer pressure focused on resource protection and sustainably produced food, feed, and fuels. To be able to make claims of environmental stewardship, these companies will need to reward producers for doing the right things, and STAR may well become a trusted method of verification. On a more local level, the STAR program will assist landowners in ensuring that their valuable cropland is being operated and cared for in the way desired. A landowner need only to specify in the lease that a tenant must participate in the program and maintain a specified STAR rating. This is much easier than specifying in the lease what practices the landowner wants and doesn't want on the land. Also, tenants who wish to rent land from owners concerned about the land's long-term productivity should participate in STAR for third-party validation that they are farming in an environmentally sound way. When the STAR program comes to an additional 25 counties in Iowa, including Cerro Gordo, in 2022, verification and spot checks will be managed by the local soil and water districts. This means the program is local, public, and operated by a group that will have no stake in the ratings. If you are curious about STAR and want to learn more, log into the CDI website at cdiowa.org and look under the STAR banner for the 2021 field form, and that can be completed online. County Veterans Affairs Commission donates trees. The Cerro Gordo County Veterans Affairs Commissioner board members, Michael Flatness, Chair, John McLaughlin, and Angelina Moe, recently presented the Mason City Council a donation of 5 trees, 2 shade trees, and 3 flowering crabs. The trees were ordered from Blackmore Nursery and were presented on April 20th at 5 p.m. in Central Park. They were planted around the Mason City Veterans Monument. The Cerro Gordo County Veterans Affairs Commissioner board members were able to tie this donation of trees into Earth Day and Arbor Day. Street Park Maintenance Supervisor Bob Bergren assisted with placement of the trees and showed the group proper tree planting techniques. A Lifetime Dedicated to All the Fields by Michelle Sprout Murray. Michelle is a writer who lives in Mason City. She may be reached at sproutmurray@gmail.com. She writes, "It started last night as I was scrolling along on Facebook in a rare moment awake on my favorite living room chair. This chair hadn't been visited for quite some time, and I was snuggled into it, enjoying some red raspberry marble ice cream as I listened to the background noise of the air conditioner and the weird movie my husband and I chose to fall asleep to on Netflix. Out of nowhere, I felt my eyes welling up, not because of my newly discovered allergies, but because of a picture and quote that popped up on my phone, reminding me of the night that my dad passed away. If you haven't heard of Story People, which is based in Decorah, Iowa, you need to check out the company that produces kitschy, colorful paintings with fun, whimsical, and meaningful stories to go along with them. There's a perfect few for every person. This late-night post especially resonated with me, and all of a sudden I was back in my dad's room at the nursing home, holding his hand as my mom and sister and I reminisced with him. It was indeed the worst and simultaneously the most beautiful moment I have experienced to this point. I couldn't hold my tears back, once again, as I read this quote meant for the masses, but at the same time speaking solely to me. Why are some people just naturally more sentimental than others? I've often told my husband that I could be attending the funeral of a stranger and be that one person crying the most. Different things hit me at different times. Sometimes I know that I may just go over the edge, like the time I saw that our church service had Beautiful Savior listed in the bulletin as the song that the congregation would sing right after the sermon. I hyped myself up and told myself that I could get through it, but after the first stanza I was bawling and had to walk out to the back to collect myself and beg an usher for a tissue. Sometimes I see something that tugs at my heart and my voice wavers and I don't trust myself to speak. Lately this consists of A. Elderly people having a difficult time walking who remind me that I won't have my relatives around forever. B. My dogs looking at me with unconditional love beaming from their soulful eyes. And C. My walking shoes, which I haven't had a chance to use for about a week, and I'd like to think they appreciated my using them today as much as I appreciated having them on my feet for a much-needed trek. Maybe I'm just overly tired. Maybe I'm just overly stressed. Maybe I'm just doubling up on my sentimentality in my older years. Whatever that reason, I feel things that others may simply brush away. I feel sick when someone tells me about one of their maladies. I feel like a punching bag when someone else shares a complaint about their day. I feel like I can't breathe when someone in my family is experiencing something awful. I'm sure there are other people out there who also feel a little too much. I've often heard that this is one of the signs of a creative person. Well, wow, the creativity that must flow through me. No wonder I'm so tired lately. I've felt all the woes of the world, and boy, there have been a lot of them this year. Maybe I haven't had enough time to read a heart-wrenching novel or watch a sappy movie lately. Those things really have a way of letting my tears escape. Why can't it be winter when all the Hallmark commercials pull at my heartstrings and unleash my pent-up tears? Why can't it be October, where my family has 3 weddings, one of which is my oldest son's? I'm sure my tear ducts will get a great workout then. Why can't everyone else feel a little more so people like me can feel a little less. I guess it's just a part of my makeup. I cry as I write. I cry as I walk. I cry as I think about memories as well as the unknown future. On the other hand, I smile as the tears subside. I guess Dr. Seuss had it right all along. His quote of, "Don't cry because it's over, smile because it happened," about covers my every feeling. Now to find a sappy Hallmark movie on TV or watch Beaches on Netflix for the umpteenth time or simply hum Beautiful Savior to myself. I haven't felt all the feels yet today, and my waterproof mascara needs a workout. Well, everybody, now it's time for us to read our obituaries. You have reached the halfway point of the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Sunday, August 8th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Constance Connie Naomi Bruesewitz, spelled Bruesewitz, January 12, 1925 to August 3rd. Constance Naomi Bruesewitz passed away on Tuesday, August 3rd. Connie was born on January 12, 1925, on the Olson farm between Kensett and Bolin, Iowa, the first child of Gilman and Edna Anderson Olson. As a baby, Connie moved with her parents to Pomona, Claremont, California, where her brother Gilman was born 4 years later. Connie and her family returned from California to the family farm in the mid-1930s. She graduated from Kensett High School in 1942. Connie married Eugene Bruesewitz on February 9, 1947. Connie and Jean shared over 65 years of marriage together in Grafton, Iowa, before Jean's death in 2013. Connie was well known for her leadership in restoring the Grafton Heritage Depot, decades of service to the Emmanuel Lutheran Church, and involvement with both Grafton Community Action and the Bolin Schoolhouse and Cultural Center. For many years, Connie was the proprietor of an antique and gift store, the This and That Shop in Grafton. She enjoyed reading, antiquing, quilting, traveling, and spending time with her family and friends. Her family and friends will remember and cherish the ease with which Connie laughed and enjoyed what came with each new day and adventure. A visitation open to the community will be held at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Grafton on Tuesday, August 10th from 5 to 7. The service and burial will be private. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to Emmanuel Lutheran Church or the Grafton Heritage Depot. Schroeder and Seitz Funeral Home in Northwood is in charge of arrangements. Alfred de Leon, age 82, of Brett, passed away Wednesday, December 16, 2020, at the Kanawha Community Home. Celebration of Life Memorial Service for Al de Leon will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, August 13th, at First Lutheran Church in Britt. A time of visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the memorial service. Following the celebration of life, there will be a luncheon and a time of sharing. Ewing Funeral Chapel in Brett is in charge of arrangements. Pam Rick, age 70, of Sheffield, passed away Wednesday, August 4th at Mercy One North Iowa. Funeral services will be held at 2 p.m. Tuesday, August 10th at Zion St. John Lutheran Church in Sheffield, with Reverend G. Kim Wells presiding. Interment will be held at Hillside Cemetery in Sheffield. Visitation will be 4 to 7 p.m. Monday at Zion St. John Lutheran Church in Sheffield. Rhett's Funeral Home in Sheffield has been entrusted with the services. Father Harry Kolker, June 26, 1942 to August 6, 2021. A life dedicated to serving humanity and his church ended on August 6, 2021. Father Harry Kolker passed away at Stonehill Nursing Care in Dubuque. He saw the sun rise over Kilimanjaro in Africa, climbed Machu Picchu in Peru, felt the poverty of Zambia, but more than anything, he was a shepherd for his parishioners during his 44 years as a diocesan priest. Harry was born June 26, 1942, the second child of Leona Westhoff Kolker and Elmer Kolker. From 86 to 89, Harry boldly mixed a sense of duty and adventure and chose to join the Missionaries of Africa Associate Program, available through the Archdiocese. He was assigned to a rural area of Zambia. He taught high school, coached basketball, and absorbed its poverty and unpredictability of life. Later, he returned there on visits several times and established aid groups for Zambian schools and trips to Zambia for his Iowa parishioners. International travel fascinated him. South America, Europe, China, and especially Africa, he rarely felt fear when traveling, taking risks that not all of his fellow travelers preferred. Harry went to great lengths to attend the graduations and weddings of his 11 nieces and nephews. He steered conversations to questions about you, not comments about himself. When he talked to you, you felt he was entirely focused on listening. He exercised, played basketball until his 60s, watched his diet, and never smoked. In 2012, Harry's Parkinson's disease progressed to the point that he had to retire. He then lived in Via Raphael for several years, where he enjoyed the company of fellow retired priests. As his disease relentlessly reduced his movements, his last years were at Stonehill Nursing in Dubuque. Visitation for Father will be held 2 to 8 p.m. Monday, August 9th at Rife Funeral Home in Dyersville, where a prayer service will be held at 7 p.m. with Reverend Carl Rice presiding. Visitation will also be held after 8:30 p.m. a.m. until services. The Mass of Resurrection shall be held at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, August 10th at Saints Peter and Paul Catholic Church in Peterborough, with Archbishop Michael Jackals presiding. The homilist will be Father Tony Cruz, a native of Petersburg. Con-celebrating will be several clergy from the Dubuque Archdiocese. Burial shall be at the parish cemetery, where Harry shall lie next to his parents, within view of his ancestors, of the church, and of the farm where he was raised. You are welcome to send beautiful flowers, but we think Harry would prefer, if you wish, a contribution to Saints Peter and Paul Parish. Thank you all for being a part of his meaningful life. Laura Caroline Rideson, December 7, 1939 to August 4th. Laura Caroline Rideson, age 81, passed away on August 4th at her residence in Palm Bay, Florida. Her husband of 59 years, Marlon Rideson, was on her side. Born in Chicago, Illinois, on December 7, 1939, she was the daughter of Glenn Holman and Mina Tweeten Holman. Mina passed away when Laura was just 2 weeks old. She was then adopted by her Aunt Ethel and Basil Turner of Elkhart, Indiana. Laura attended Elkhart High School, where she frequently played in the national anthem for home football games in Northside Gym from the rafters above midcourt. She graduated from Northwestern University with a BA in English. While at Northwestern, she was a member of the Kappa Delta sorority. After graduation, Laura was an English teacher at Mishawaka High School until the birth of her two sons. Laura was active in the community of Elkhart, Indiana. She was a member of and served as an officer for several organizations, including PEO, Tri-Kappa, and Riverside Club. She served on the board of directors of CAPS and was a founding director and the first woman to serve on the board of the Elkhart County Community Foundation. Laura also served as a court-appointed special advocate, CASA, for Elkhart County Children. Memorial donations in lieu of flowers may be made to the River Queen Fund at the Elkhart County Community Foundation. Pauline S. Ryer, October 14, 1938 to August 5, 2021, Pauline S. Ryer of Clarion passed away Tuesday, August 5th at home. Funeral services will be held 11 a.m. on Monday, August 9th at Clarion United Presbyterian Church in Clarion, with Pastor Bill Kim officiating. Burial will be at Evergreen Cemetery in Clarion. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to services at the church on Monday. Pauline was the daughter of Lincoln and Eva Carter Jorgensen. She was born on October 14, 1938, in Clarion. Pauline grew up in Holmes and graduated from Clarion High School with the class of 1956. On November 3, 1957, Pauline was united in marriage to Robert Raymond Rear. They made their home in Clarion. Pauline worked in banking, was a homemaker, and later joined Bob in running their hardware stores. Before retirement, Pauline and Bob worked together at the Wright County Courthouse. She treasured her time spent with her children. She loved her family very much and was so proud of them. She was happiest when she was with her family, whether they were tailgating at an Iowa Hawkeye football game or visiting the lake. Pauline was an active and involved member of the Clarion United Presbyterian Church. She served as clerk of session for 30 years and was part of different church circles. Ewing Funeral Home in Clarion, Iowa is in charge of arrangements. Bethel Ann Fahrenholz, February 12, 1934 to July 31st. Bethel Ann Borchardt Fahrenholz, age 87, of Mason City, died on Saturday, July 31st at Mercy One North Iowa Hospice. A memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. on Monday, August 9th at Trinity Lutheran Church, with Pastor Kathy Graves as officiating. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the service. Inurnment will be at the Grafton Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to your local food shelf or to the family, and they will distribute them to the Mason City Food Bank. Bethel was born on February 12, 1934, in a farm home in Worth County, Iowa. She was the daughter of Albert and Alma Glassell Borchardt. She attended grade school and high school in Rock Falls. Bethel married Irvin Fahrenholt in Tatonka, Iowa, on December 28, 1952. Bethel had a passion for hospital work. This passion led her to get certified to manage the sterilization units at St. Mary's Hospital in Rochester, Minnesota, and King Faisal Hospital in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. After returning from Saudi Arabia, she spent several months volunteering at the Mercy Ships in Texas. Then, Bethel resided in Prescott, Arizona for 13 years. Finally, in 2004, she returned to northern Iowa to be close to family and friends. Bethel's faith was important to her. She facilitated several Bible study groups, gave communion to the homebound, and was a member of several fellowship groups at Trinity Lutheran Church. Arrangements are with Major Erickson Funeral Home in Mason City. Mardell Jean Larson, April 12, 1942 to July 16. Mardell Jean Larson, age 79, of Tulsa, was received into heaven on July 16, surrounded by her loving family. Mardell was born on April 12, 1942 in Rowan, Iowa, the daughter of Norris and Grace Larson. She was raised in Britt, graduating from high school in the class of 1960. After graduation, she was married and began her family, raising four children with commitment and devotion. She had been a real estate agent for over 25 years in the Tulsa, Oklahoma area, and enjoyed helping people find their dream homes. She loved Jesus, gardening, baking, and spending time with family and friends, who all benefited regularly from her devout prayer life. She was truly a woman of great faith, and that was reflected in her daily life. The gifts of hospitality and compassion were evident to all. Anna Dale McClaskey. Nana McClaskey died peacefully at home February 20th in New York. A graveside interment for Anna Dale and her husband Norman will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, August 13th at Clear Lake Cemetery. For those unable to attend, the graveside service will be live streamed on the Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel Facebook page. Memorial donations may be made in her name to either the University of Iowa Center for Advancement Elementary Education Program or the Humane Society at Lollipop Farm in Fairport, New York. Other correspondence can be sent to Mindy McClaskey Farina, Beacon Hill, Fairport, New York, 14450. Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapels is in charge of arrangements. Jack D. Russell, age 98, of Mason City, passed away Friday, August 6th at the IOOF home with family at his side. Care of the family has been entrusted to Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel of Mason City. Dale Leland Stock, age 95, of Dumont, Iowa, passed away Friday, August 6th at his home in Dumont. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, August 11th at St. Patrick Catholic Church in Hampton. Visitation will be held from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday, August 10th at Sietsma Vogel Funeral Home in Dumont. Burial with military honors will take place in the Dumont Cemetery. The Sietsma Vogel Funeral Home of Dumont is caring for Dale and his family. Agnes J. Falgitano Garner, age 91, of Mason City, passed away November 25, 2020, at Mercy One North Iowa Medical Center. She was surrounded by the love of her six daughters. A memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, August 14th. At Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel with Reverend Kenneth Galing, celebrant. Interment will be held following the service at Elmwood St. Joseph Cemetery. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the service at the funeral home. The family requests that casual attire to be worn to the services. In lieu of flowers, please donate in her memory to the Epiphany Parish Catholic Church or to the Salvation Army of Mason City. Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel is in charge of arrangements. And that concludes today's obituaries. John Skipper, who retired from the Globe Gazette in February 2018 after 52 years in newspapers, most of that in Mason City, writes a weekly column in the Sunday paper. His column today is entitled, Mistrust is the Hallmark of Today's Society. Silly me. Some random thoughts about current events. The COVID virus and its variants are still a health threat. Getting it under control has become a problem because of all the opinions people have about whether the threat really exists and if it does, how to fix it. Had we had the same reaction to the polio vaccine 60 years ago, polio would still be a national problem today. One of the differences between reaction to the polio and COVID vaccines is the trust of the American people. Perhaps mistrust is a better way of putting it. Two television programs come to mind from the era of the polio vaccine. One was called Who Do You Trust?, a game show in the late 1950s and early 60s, in which three couples competed for prize money by answering questions from the moderator. The gimmick of the show was the husband was given the topic of the question. He then had to decide whether he would answer the question correctly or trust his wife to do so. The winning couple at the end of the show got $75. At about the same time, comedian Don Adams starred in a comedy called Get Smart. Adams played a detective. One of the running gags on the show was Adams exaggerating his circumstances when talking to his boss. Would you believe I was surrounded by 10 gangsters? He'd say. No, said the chief. Would you believe 5? No. Would you believe 3? For many years, the catchphrase, would you believe, was part of the American lexicon. Oh, for the good old days. Now many Americans don't know who to believe, who to trust with regard to the COVID virus vaccine, and it is no laughing matter. So let's play the COVID version of Who Do You Trust? Regarding all of the information sources available to help you make a decision about getting vaccinated, who do you trust? Donald Trump? Dr. Anthony Fauci and other healthcare professionals? Scientists? The government? Television liberal commentators? Television conservative commentators? Medical journals? Your family doctor? Your loved ones? Your next door neighbor? Social media? As you narrow down your list as to who you would trust, ask yourself why you wouldn't trust each of the others. Chances are you have been most influenced to distrust others by television commentators and social media, the two biggest spreaders of misinformation. I end this by asking, would you believe that 100 readers say they agree with me most of the time? Would you believe 50? Would you believe 5? Silly me. Here are the letters to the editor for today. The first is written by Patrick O'Toole of Nora Springs. He writes, we need doers in Washington, D.C. Mr. Corbyn has brought to light one of Iowa's issues, sending followers, not doers, to D.C. Vote for change in 2022. The next writer is Keith Kohler of Mason City. He writes, Steve Roberts, how do you know Jesus? Well, Steve Roberts, I think I have a retort for your completely self-serving political commentary. First off, I'd like to know how you know Jesus so well. You seem to believe he was your college dorm mate, and you know exactly how he would relate to our present situation. You present scripture to enhance your position, yet you leave out personal health and choice as an option for not getting the vaccine. Who do you think you are to narrate your own version of scripture or to narrate your vaccination belief? Is it and throw in guilt along with it? Is it possible that some people have medical issues that make it impossible to be vaccinated? Are we going to shame them and send them to your perceived hell, Steve? Oh, gee, we also had to hear your feeling for former President Trump that actually told us all we need to know about you, Steve. How absolutely predictable. You liberals have a playbook, and we have read it. I'll be searching for stories on social media about how many undocumented immigrants you have allowed into your home. Maybe some of these people haven't had basic vaccinations for even polio. But please, tell me more about how people who choose not to get vaccinated are so unworthy of God's love. It never ceases to amaze me that the word hypocrisy seems to slide off you people like water off a duck's back. Steve, do us all a favor and stay in your lane. Quit preaching when some of the good book passages only serve your agenda and narrative and can be twisted into your dementia. The lamestream media has that handled already. It's already indoctrinated to you. I'd say God bless you, but I seriously don't believe you believe in God. The next author is James Sales of Mason City. He writes, toil and trouble with COVID-19 vaccination. Mark Twain once said, it's easier to fool people than to convince them that they've been fooled. So here we are again, even on a local level, establishing battle lines for the next great American ideological and philosophic argle-bargle. To vaccinate or not to vaccinate, whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and hypodermic nails to squelch that pesky COVID virus, or to rebel against it, opening the door to a sea of vocational troubles, and by opposing it, find oneself adrift in a sea of unemployment. Apologies to the bard. Last week's main event was John L. Sullivan Skipper versus Rambling Ryan Skubick. Clearly that generated dozens of disparate comments from you in the gallery. How totally entertaining that has been. And then we are greeted on our drives on Highway 122 by optic-colored signs declaring Mercy One a bad, bad employer. But you see, it is not really an us versus them issue. There is just too much precedent out there. This is how it works. An employer can establish conditions of employment. Employees can choose to abide by those conditions or find a more personally acceptable employer. Anti-vax people are right. Personal freedoms abound in America. But sometimes your choices are not what would be your first pick. Twain also once said, "Never argue with stupid people. They will drag you down to their level and then beat you senseless with their stick of experience." And again, that was written by James Sales. And then Val Mondal of Mason City writes, "We need to admit our wrongs." I would like to comment on the column by J.W. Sales in The Globe on July 18th. Solomon Stratton from Slave to North Iowa Patriarch. The radical factions, as you refer to them, are not trying to demonize this nation, but rather just be truthful about the motives and facts that built this country instead of glossing over the mistakes that were made. This is what teaches youth to be truthful and builds character. A nation that admits to and tries to right the wrongs that were done is a nation to be proud of. Well, everybody, that concludes today's reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Sunday, August 8th, 2021. I'm your volunteer reader, Amy B. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening.